to another episode of How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. In today's episode, Lynn from our SBDC team and Chris Wood from Be Caffeinated discuss understanding your customers' needs and keeping an eye on your competition.
Today, another great subject I want to talk about, and we have a great guest with us as well, is market research, market evaluation. You know, market research and evaluation is so critical, whether you're starting a business or you have a business. And how do you determine feasibility? How do you see what your clients, potential clients or customers are doing, what their traits are, what they're thinking, also what your competition is doing and how you do that? It is planning and conducting a critical component of any business. It provides decision makers with important information to decide the course of where you're going with your company, with your small business. I'm going to talk about seven things, and we'll go through these individually as we have our guests as well. But we're going to talk about why it's important. We're going to talk about how it helps you understand your customer, how it helps you conduct your marketing based on informed decisions, how it helps you keep an eye on the competitors. We all have competitors, folks, whether you think you do or don't, you do. So remember that helps you expand and innovate if that's what you want to do. Set goals. It's going to help you set goals around as you're growing your business, and then it helps you know which risk to take and increase earning potential. So one of the things that our center talks with everyone about is, do you understand who your true target client is? And market evaluation and research will help you do that. A lot of people think they know, but once they go through and do this research, sometimes there are a lot of aha moments. We're going to talk about some tools as well, because as this series talks about, what are tools in these different areas? So we're going to give you some tools that you can do and use, and then some that we have that you can use to help you along the way. Understand, there may be some things you have to pay for, but paying a small amount to help you save money or make money will be well worth it. So we're going to cover a lot, and I want to bring in now our guest today, and it's Chris Wood with Be Caffeinated. And so Chris, first introduce yourself, tell us how Be Caffeinated came about, and then we're going to talk about your progress through the opening of stores and how market research or evaluation assisted you, how things may not have gone always exactly like you thought, and, you know, what were the good and the bad. Yep. So go ahead and introduce.
Yeah. So like you said, my name is Chris Wood. I'm one of the owners of Be Caffeinated Drive-Thru Coffee. We started a little over 2 years ago in Red Bank, which is, as most of you know, an enclave surrounded by Chattanooga. We have three locations now, one in North Shore and one on Chatt State's campus. It's been an awesome journey. When I got to college, I started as a polymer science major, which is just harder chemistry. Got through 2 years of it, and I was like, this is terrible. I don't want to be in a lab my entire life. I like people too much. So I switched to entrepreneurship as my undergrad, never looked back. Had a really awesome opportunity to go to grad school and get my MBA for free through an assistantship program. In that program, I was assigned to someone named James Wilcox, who ran the Southern Entrepreneurship Program for USM, which we worked a lot with the SBDC there in South Mississippi. And so I learned a lot about entrepreneurship. The premise of the SEP was to teach high school students across the state about financial literacy, economics, entrepreneurship, kind of teach people about the opportunities they had. So I got a lot of firsthand experience with doing marketing for those events and kind of networking, creating events. And so I kind of used a lot of those skills and graduated and got the glamorous job of working at McDonald's right out of grad school, which, you know, paid the bills. And I was living with my roommate at the time, and we were like, hey, what would be fun to do? And we opened a snow cone stand. And then past that, we said, what would be even more fun to do? And we started thinking about kind of opportunities. And I had heard my boss at McDonald's say that 70 to 80% of their sales were through the drive-thru. And so our, our gears started turning, and there was a local drive-through coffee shop where we were from. And so we got jobs there, learned the ropes, the inner machinations, became friends with the owner, and then convinced him to kind of believe in us and invest in us. Moved up here to Chattanooga, got another investor involved, and opened our first location about 7 months after we moved here. So it's been a crazy journey. Started out with just me and Doug working like 6 days a week. My family worked some Saturdays to give us some time that we weren't working, and now we have almost 30 employees in 3 locations. So we're really excited. We've grown a lot, made a lot of mistakes, and I think market evaluation is so important, and we've done a lot really well and a lot really not well that we've learned from.
Well, and just in your story and talking about going to work for a drive-through coffee place, mm-hmm. that's market research right there.
Absolutely.
You're on the job learning it, and you're seeing from working with others. And, you know, we have a lot of times talk to people who want to have this dream, and they do something very well, but they've never worked in that industry. Mm-hmm. So you took the right path in learning it, working for someone else. Fortunately, you had a boss who believed in you and was also open to, hey, you're going to go do this in a town far away from where I am. You're not going to be my competition. So we want to help you. And he believed in you. So great story. So when you started looking at that first location, talk a little bit about, I know, where are the traffic counts? Where are the people coming and going from? That probably entered into it. But talk just a little bit about the Red Bank location and kind of how it came about and how you used the market evaluation and research to do that.
So our location in Red Bank is, for those of you that are local, an old Central Park building. Basically, it's 2 stories. The first floor is 12 by 12, and the second floor is also 12 by 12. So 288 square feet total, not a lot of space to work with, but it's actually more than you would think once you get down to it. When I was talking to Lynn, we kind of started digging into the traffic counts and starting the demographic research, and we were dead set on our number one demographic being commuter traffic on their way to work, coming down Morrison Springs, turning on Ashland Terrace, and us trying to kind of get them to turn that mile, go through the drive-through, and then just redirect back on to Dayton to go back on Ashland Terrace. So we were convinced that was our demographic, our main target market, and we were very, very wrong. We didn't realize it for a couple months, but one day we sat down and started thinking about like who we saw every day, who our regulars were, and we're like, that's not at all what we thought it was.
Yeah, and you know, but the thing is, you early on, you said, okay, wait a minute, what we thought is not what we're dealing with here, so let's reset, redirect your marketing, redirect how you brand there. And so you sat down, you did that, and you determined it was more of a local folks, not necessarily people driving into downtown, but it were people, I think, probably, didn't you tell me, maybe teachers and some others with the local high school there, that you were getting a lot of those people, mm-hmm. correct?
And also the main one became just people that lived in Red Bank. So if they lived within 3 miles, that was kind of our target market, which we originally thought being so tangential to a neighborhood would be a downside, but it actually became one of our biggest assets. And Red Bank, just as a community, has really opened their arms to us. We've become just really involved with some of the local government stuff and nonprofits and trying to give back where we can. And it's just been a really cool experience that we did not expect. We thought it would be the kind of faceless, on your way to work people. Not that that's inherent to that, but it turned into being more community driven and has kind of guided a lot of our decisions, both in marketing and as a business.
Another great point is you took this marketing, you saw it was community, and you involved in the community. So if you're a community-based business, how are you giving back to those who are so good to you? And I think that's something that is missed sometimes, because there is a reciprocal value there. So great. So you got that one going. It's still going. It's still doing well. And then we fast forward, and all of a sudden we're looking at the second location. What are things that you may have done similarly, and maybe things that you did differently when you were looking, or just talk through that second location?
Sure. So technically our real second location is actually our third location now, but we opened up at Chat State March 2020. We opened up the Friday before COVID shutdowns happened, which obviously we weren't excited about, but the people at Chat State were very gracious and basically said, you can come back when things are more back to normal. And so our equipment kind of sat there for a while. But the idea behind the Chat State as our second location was they didn't have a coffee shop or anything like that. The only coffee was kind of a community cafe set up in the cafeteria, which is, I mean, it was fine. But, you know, if you're on a college campus, at least for me, you want that coffee that'll get you through the day. So our kind of idea was our second or third primary target market or persona that we were running into consistently were college students and more of the, for lack of a better term, hipster crowd, which college campus is perfect for that. And so that kind of younger generation is something that we wanted to really engage with, because at the Red Bank location, it was kind of the generation that was a little older than them that we were engaging with. So that's why we went to Chat State, and then that obviously didn't work out. And so we took the equipment from there and found a location in North Shore. The impetus was more along the lines of we got a really good opportunity to open our own roasting company, and we wanted to go into a space where we could kind of subsidize the roaster with a drive-through coffee shop. And I just happened to drive by this location one day. My parents live relatively close, so I don't know how I didn't think of it. We'd gone through three different letters of intents with different properties all around town. So this was actually our fourth location that we tried for, and I'm really happy that the other ones didn't work out. And so we moved in technically as the roaster, but with the drive-through on it. And it's kind of the intent behind the North Shore location with the market research was our other primary demographic that wasn't as prevalent in Red Bank is the working class slash, I don't even know, just
professional.
Yeah. Yeah. The white collar, I guess, office job oriented type, and North Shore, you know, is super prevalent with that. So we were really able to take our brand to the next level. The difference between our Red Bank shop and our North Shore shop is just inherent to the type of building is drastic. The Red Bank location is only drive-through. This one is drive-through with the patio on each side, an inside space where you order, the roaster is inside. So it just has that next step of evolution of brand development that we were able to kind of steer into. So now with our three locations, we can kind of cater to all three of our primary demographics all at the same time. And so if you want that kind of cafe patio experience, you go to the North Shore one. If you want the really quick, efficient, friendly, like, you know, just drive-through experience, you go to the Red Bank one. If you want the kind of cafe, but more laid back, you know, college student experience, you go to the Chat State one. So we're kind of trying to be able to play to all of the people that we've really been able to engage with and encounter and really just build into and develop those relationships with.
And I want to say I'm glad you're only one block away, because it helps feed my coffee addiction. Yeah. So thank you for that. No, I think it's really neat in that you've taken beyond the, you know, you've taken the different demographics, but you've now added in the roasting to where you're now doing that part of it. And so I think that's really cool. Obviously, three locations, three different demographics, as you will. How do you craft a marketing plan to fit all of that? I know you guys are very intentional.
Yeah, so up until relatively recently, I was the marketing team, which, as any small business owner knows, if you have too many hats to wear, you forget to put them on sometimes. So I reached a point where we opened the North Shore shop, where I was talking to kind of like Doug, my business partner, and some of our other mentors like Lynn and some other people. And we kind of all determined that we were doing well with the Instagram, but it wasn't consistent enough, regular enough. Maybe a week or two after I hit that realization, someone messaged the Facebook page. They had known Luke, our roaster, and they ran this local magazine called Scenic Trends. And they were basically like, hey, I'm looking for a job. I like your coffee shop. I'd like to talk to you about an opportunity with marketing or barista or whatever. So we sat down. It's one of those intuitive things where we instantly clicked and vibed, really liked his initiative and what he was kind of about. And so I met him, and he went back home after the meeting, talked to his best friend, who was also his business partner at Scenic Trends. I interviewed them, I think, the next week, and just kind of instantly hired them as marketing, and they also were baristas. And so at that point, it went from me running like man-to-man defense to like zone defense as far as marketing was concerned. Yep. So it changed from me doing our marketing, coming up with all the ideas, to now I have a team of marketing guys. It was the three of us, and we have a weekly marketing meeting where we plan now 2 weeks ahead of time what all of our posts are going to be. We kind of figure out all the events that are coming up, and we create the content as much ahead of time as possible so that it's easier on us and we also can be more consistent. We follow a lot of different philosophies, like from people like Gary Vaynerchuk, who owns VaynerMedia, Sasha Group, stuff like that. He wrote a book called Jab, 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 Right Hook, which is basically the premise of don't always use a right hook in your marketing. Like, don't sell every post you make. You should have jabs to soften up. So basically, like, give people content, give. And then every now and then try and do the right hook, which would be like, hey, we have this deal, or, you know, package. But don't just sell every day, because people don't like that. You're not going to form those relationships. We also use a lot of philosophies from Simon Sinek's teachings, which is empathy, emotional intelligence, kind of community and love driven stuff, which kind of inspired our North Shore manager to start our give pack programs that we do, where we work with local nonprofits and do a profit share. So to more directly answer your question, we have very intentionally created a system where we talk through every week all of our marketing plans and ideas, and tackle with our posts the different demographics we have that'll kind of speak differently to each person. There's a marketing concept called developing your personas. Basically, our three main personas are the working person, the family person that doesn't have time to get out of the car, and then, like, you know, the student kind of that we talked about. And so a lot of our posts are more directly targeted towards one of those personas. So if our post is about, hey, we have a patio, that's obviously not targeted towards the mom who doesn't want to get her kids out of the car seat. That's more targeted towards the working professional who wants to set up with their laptop. If we do a post about our new pastries, that could be related to anyone, but then we might go even further and say, we have like this vegan gluten-free pastry, which might be more specifically targeted towards the hipster college age group. Each one kind of, we can target them towards those different personas, as well as kind of the pillars of marketing that we do. So,
yeah, that's great. And, you know, by understanding as an owner, like you said, you've got all these hats, you know, it's like just like spinning plates. You're going to break some plates at some at some point. You bring people on. Those people don't always see the world exactly the way you see it. But if you get good people, you have a, like you said, you have a good rapport, but they may also see things a little differently. And I appreciate you mentioning the resources, the people you follow. Those are some fantastic ones. And I do want to take this time to kind of mention, while we have this, that there are some different tools out there to do it. If you talk to us at the SPDC, when you're looking for tools around market research and getting this information you need, well, maybe it is, you can do something like a ring study, where you can look at a 5 mile, 8 mile, 10 mile radius, and you can see what the customer spend is. You can see what your demographic truly looks like, so that not only are you doing it for, like you, Chris, here on the North Shore, but you also understand how your customer thinks, how your client thinks, and you can craft things around. And I know you work with some great pastry folks, some folks that do some really great goodies for you. You can, that helps determine, I'm sure, what you may sell at Chat State versus what you sell at Red Bank versus North Shore can be very different as well. So you can do that. A couple I want to mention from our standpoint are Data Axle, which used to be Reference USA, Statista, and then we have one that is only for SPDCs called SPDC Net, where we can dive in by your industry and help you, whether it's a startup package or, Chris, when it's time for store number 4 and 5 and so on, we take, and I know we've done some of this stuff, but we can take specifically things and look at those areas. And also, as you're marketing, help you understand where, you know, whether you're doing some geofencing, things like that, which will help where your clients are, where they live. because the North Shore, while there are a lot of folks around the North Shore location, you've also got, I know because I will drive through early in the morning, and you got a lot of people in that drive through, so they're heading on their way to work. But where they live, getting them where they live with the advertising. Mm-hmm. So those are some great ones that you can use with us. Chris, any other things that you can think of when, if you're talking, you know, as we're talking to folks who may be in business and they're looking at additional store, or maybe they're just looking at growing. They're online, but they're looking at kind of growing their brand, because BeCaffeinated has grown as a brand. That's, to me, that's part of your success, is not just, okay, we have great coffee, but, oh, it's BeCaffeinated. They do this, they do this. What are maybe some other things that you would suggest for people?
Yeah. One thing we did, we went to our first coffee fest, which was amazing. It was in Atlanta. It was basically just a giant room full of these exhibits of coffee stuff. And I'm pretty sure no matter what industry you're in, there's probably something similar to that. We learned a lot. I was basically floating off the ground from how much coffee I drank that day. But yeah, I mean, just kind of finding like-minded people or people in your industry and just asking them. We've had several groups of people come and either shadow me for a day, or I've trained them or answered a bunch of questions because they want to open their own drive-through coffee shop. I mean, what's the worst that someone can say if you ask them, hey, can I come and ask you a bunch of questions? I mean, they might cuss you out, but like, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, most people, their business is a lot like their child.
Yeah.
They birthed it.
They pull out the pictures out of their wallet.
Oh, yeah.
Roll down to the floor.
Absolutely, they do. So you're right. I think I think those are some great ones that, again, don't be afraid. We tell people sometimes it's going to a city that's similar to where you're at, that same similar demographics, and finding someone who's doing something. I always tell people, find somewhere that somebody's doing what you're wanting to do, and you look at it and go, I want to do it like them.
Reverse engineering it,
right?
Too. Yeah,
I think that's a great one.
I think another thing too is if your industry already exists in the town that you want, just keeping track of technically competition, but just the other people that are doing it, seeing what they do well, what they don't do well, and just finding holes that you can fill. Like one thing I think that we offer that not a ton of other coffee shops offer in Chattanooga, which there are a ton of coffee shops, but our signature drinks are like what they're our bread and butter, and they're just.
Which I'm drinking right now.
You're drinking the Chattahoolean, which is our partnership with CFC. But it's a white chocolate caramel latte, which isn't complicated, but people just love not having to make another decision. Like they don't have to say, what do I want in my drink? They say, that one sounds fun. I want to try that. And, you know, just kind of finding a couple of things that you can offer that either aren't already happening in your industry in that area or that you can further refine, and that will really make you stand out, give you your own niche, which is part of why I think we've been successful as well, is just being able to offer a pretty sweet latte that has fun flavors.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on something you mentioned. While, yes, you have a lot of competition, as I've seen in talking with you, and because we have obviously other clients who do the same thing, there's a competition, but there's a lot of friendly competition. Mm-hmm. Competitors, sometimes just talking with people, as you know, we say, BeCaffeinated is not going to be the end-all be-all for every single person. You know, there are others, and it's just having, like you say, talking to people, seeing what they're doing, feeling a hole. But I know you all worked with other people prior to getting your roaster. There's ways you can work with folks and still be competitors, because as we've learned, there's plenty of market out there for good companies, right?
Yep. And I really like the concept. So in early 17th century, coffee shops were called conversation cafes. And so like, you know, this was on the rise in Europe. And so you would go to a different conversation cafe to talk about different stuff. So for example, you would go to one to talk about board games, one to talk about books, one to talk about politics. And so each one kind of had their own niche that you went there to talk about a certain thing. And I think that's still super relevant today, not quite for the conversation aspect, but like you go to Sleepyhead for its own specific aesthetic. You go to us for a specific thing. You go to Goodman's, you go to Mad Priest. Like no matter who it is, each person has their thing that they're good for. And I think it would be arrogant of us to try to be the one for everyone, because that doesn't make sense. It shouldn't be that way. If you try to go after everyone, you won't keep anyone. And so I think just kind of finding your niche, finding what makes you different. Like Sleepyhead does really good coffee and they have really cool plants. Like that's just a really cool vibe that they have. Goodman's is just a really comfortable, like family atmosphere with really good coffee. And now they have the patio in St. Elmo. So each one has their own thing. And so finding your own identity, which sometimes may not happen until after you open. But if it's something that you have, like Sleepyhead, I mentioned them again, they were just really big plant fanatics. And so they were able to tie that into their brand identity. So if you have your own identity, you can tie that into your brand and then kind of engage your customers or target markets with that, because people really like to identify with unique and fun things like that. So.
Now that's great. And I appreciate you mentioning the others, because there are some just amazing shops locally that do great work. One other thing on that is also, you all know what you do well. And so you knew early on, especially, I know when we were talking about North Shore, you all are not pastry makers.
Yeah.
You don't make cinnamon rolls. That's not where you needed to be. So you were started working with other local companies who did other things very well. You all cross market with each other on the things that you're doing well. And again, that's another way that you can show great value to your clients, but you're also working with a number of other small business. I think it's a great marketing tool.
It's fun. And the inherent positive part of that is if they post about you on their stuff, you get automatic, engagement. So that's kind of the selfish reason, but it's just more fun working with other local small businesses like that. And kind of the macroeconomic principle is specialization. So if America tried to be good, like make corn and wheat and whatever else, they could do a little bit of it. But if they just specialize in one and Canada specializes in another, then you can do it better, more efficiently and trade the excess. And so that's kind of like our bakery friends are really good at baking and we don't want to do that. We just are really good at coffee and then we get to trade the excess.
That is fantastic. I found an article and I want to mention six of the best research tools that are listed. I'm just going to go through these and for our audience to let them know that these are out there. So in no particular order, a test is rated by a number of companies as one of the best in market research tools. I did a little looking at what they're doing and just some really cool things. Of course, Google Trends is an obvious one. I think a lot of people know about that. But again, I think it's worth mentioning. Social Mention is another one. And it's a really good tool that surfaces real-time data from social media platforms. So it's a really good one out there. Ramesh, I saw that one mentioned a number of times. I've really not looked a lot, but it really goes into the qualitative versus quantitative type research. So it's a good one. Heartbeat AI, looking at that artificial intelligence. And then, Answer the Public was the last one that we had. So these are some tools. These are some sites that you can go to. A lot of them have a free portion. And then some of them, after a while, it's subscription-based. But again, you get what you pay for. If you're starting, how do you know? How are you going to know your idea is really going to work till you do these things? Chris, you had a good idea that B-caffeinated could work, but you couldn't go strictly off of what happened in Mississippi, right? You had to think, okay, this is Chattanooga, different city. Now, how can I take what I learned there and use it here? But what are things I may have to do differently?
I think that's a really good tie into the concept of the lean startup with Eric Ries. He wrote a couple books about that, and the MVP or minimum viable product, which would be where you can kind of find that effect, do what you're doing, but in the cheapest way possible. So if we didn't want to have a brick and mortar drive through coffee shop, maybe we could rent, a table and a tent for a day and brew a lot of coffee and go somewhere where we think it would work and see what the reception is, have conversations with people. Ask them what they want, because that's always a really good marketing piece of advice is ask your customers what they want and you might find what they want to pay money for.
And it seems so simple, but we see so many times small businesses not engaging with their clients. I know your manager at North Shore, Tyler, mm-hmm. gotten to know him very well. And I can hear Tyler talking to people. How is that? You know, and he's asking questions. One other tie-in I want to make that I think is important for small businesses, and we have this in pretty much all of our conversations, when they're looking at, and it does tie into market research, is understanding the customer service aspect of how your client thinks. I'm sitting in your shop with a client, and she tells me a story of why she goes there. And it was surrounding a day right around Christmas, and it was cold, gloomy, rainy. She walked in there. She was a little depressed because it's rainy and gloomy and cold. And you hand her, or somebody in your place hands her, a cup of coffee with a dove. It resonated with her. She's that one of those demographics that you're talking about. And because of your research and doing these things, you know that little things like that could brighten somebody's day at the right time. And what was funny was Tyler remembered her from that day. Yep. So again, it's your people understanding you're always doing market research. You're always talking to people. You're always getting their ideas around, hey, how can we continue to get better, right? I'm sure you guys are doing that on a regular basis.
Yeah, quality control. I think so. One thing that we try to do when we are interviewing for new baristas is we don't really care if they've had experience in coffee before. We hire based on kind of the personality instead of the experience, because you can teach anyone to be a barista, but you can't teach them how to be a good person or to ask people how their drinks are or to color on sleeves. And credit where credit's due. The sleeve thing was definitely not my idea. It was one of our baristas that started it, and kind of a lot of people just took it on. And sometimes they just do a lot of them and they really enjoy it. And just, you know, we could have shut it down and been like, hey, that's, I'm not paying you to doodle, but we thought it was fun. And people experience, you know, they really enjoyed that extra step. And so just making sure that when you hire people, you don't have to be the only one that comes up with your own ideas. You shouldn't bring on people and then not listen to them. And if you're leading a meeting, you should really be the one speaking the least.
Yeah.
Which is hard to do sometimes.
Well, and it just says, like you said, you wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
You're hearing more of it from your baristas yeah. who are right there on the front line doing it. So if they're doing something to add value, why not let them do that? And that's a great way to, you know, empower, because marketing is not just, okay, I've got a marketing department or a marketing person and they're going to do it all. No, it's everyone. Mm-hmm. It's everyone doing it. So, Chris, we're going to start wrapping up here. As you said earlier, we did some things really good and some things not so good. Fortunately, you learned from those things. But talk through any advice, any things that you want our folks to know.
Yeah. Reading is awesome. I've learned so much just from reading random books. I'm a hardcore fan of Simon Sinek, like I mentioned before. And so one thing you can do is if you find someone you really like, agree with or vibe with or whatever, however you want to say it, just going on Amazon or something and looking up because you read this suggestions. So because you read this book, maybe you'll like this one. And that's usually a good way to kind of refine an area of something like that. One book that was really helpful for me was Do Cool Stuff. It's not stuff, but I'm not going to say that on here, but by Miki Agrawal. And one thing I picked up from her in that book was soft openings. She didn't do one when she tried to open it. And it went terribly. And she made a lot of people mad that lived in the neighborhood around her. And it just didn't go well. And so she kind of had to dig herself out of her own hole that she made by not doing a soft opening. So when we opened in Red Bank, we had a 2-day soft opening where we handed out over 600 drinks for free. And the first day we opened, we had regulars already that already knew what they liked. When we opened in North Shore, we did half off drinks for the first day or two because we didn't want to do free because we didn't want everyone to come from our other location and get it. But, and you know, at Chat State, we kind of did the same thing with the faculty. We just handed out a bunch of drinks. And so kind of doing a soft opening lets you develop that relationship ahead of time with your customers, but also lets you work out all the kinks. So even with, you know, we've opened 3 now and every time there's something that comes up that we didn't think about with the new orientation or whatever. So soft openings are very, very good.
You have been someone, because again, we've had a number of conversations. You've used some of our consultants and other people. You knew a lot about the business of the business when you got here. but you were not afraid to ask for help. You were not afraid. Like you said, reading. Reading is power. It's knowledge. You don't have any trouble picking up the phone or coming by and saying, hey, I'm not sure about this, or can you help me with this, or do you have someone who understands whatever? No one knows everything about everything, and it's finding those mentors, those peers in your life that can help you, and they can come from many places. Again, meeting the people who then became part of your marketing team, sitting down and talking, knowing that you alone could no longer do what you're doing. We always urge, and I would urge folks listening, you need mentors, you need peers who will tell you what you need to hear. Chris, I'm sure, because I know your family, that they're going to tell you what you want to hear. You're wonderful. You're great. It's all going to be perfect. But you know from the guy that you worked with in Mississippi and beyond that you had people telling you, this is great, but, yeah. Right?
Yeah, so, which is always more valuable.
Yeah, it is. It's so much more valuable. Any final words for us, Chris?
Yeah, I just have to say, I've been working with the SBDC here for, I guess, almost 3 years now. And before this, I was working with the one in South Mississippi. And for all you guys listening, it's an invaluable resource. You don't pay for it, which is amazing. You're getting literally high-level consulting for no cost to you. So take advantage of it. Abuse Lynn and Josh and everyone as much as possible. And just, there is no question too stupid or too small to ask. If they don't know it, they know someone that does know it. And it's just a really, really awesome resource. And it's something that, yeah, like you said, I still come and ask them stuff, even this far in. And I'm sure I will for, you know, the foreseeable future, because you just have to always show up as a student. And the day that you assume you know everything is the day that your business is going to fail. So.
I think that's great advice. And you said it, there is only one stupid question. It's the one you don't ask.
Yeah, exactly.
So, folks, I hope this was valuable to you. Chris, thank you so much for taking time out and telling your story and talking about it. If you're in our area, go see Be Caffeinated. Try the Chattahooligan. It is fantastic. But we appreciate you spending your time with us. Folks, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and be sure to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you next week here on How to Business.